Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good Monday afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. How was your weekend? I'm hoping it was as awesome as mine. I was here yesterday having a good time explaining the four different types of luck.
Four different types of luck?
Yeah.
I had to dissect Helmut yesterday morning the specifically, yeah. Okay, since I'm history induced, the differences of where we find ourselves today, specifically with the establishment of the what was that tribunal's name, the one for the Nuremberg trials?
Like the Nuremberg trials you were talking about?
No, but cascading from that, because it was on the 8th of August 1945, the London Agreement. It was an agreement between the four countries. Mm-hmm. Was signed that saw the creation of the Nuremberg trials, but they call it the International Military, the International Military Tribunal. And if you go down that rabbit hole, you also get to ask the question, what is the modern day purposes of the ICJ and ICC?
Yeah.
The ICC is the one where any person can be charged in front of that court. But it has member nations, and the ICJ is the UN one.
Yeah.
But it only deals with disputes between countries.
Yeah.
And at the same time, while that military tribunal was happening, it is known as the IMT, its old name. It faced a fundamental problem specifically in that the Americans wanted the specific clause of charging an act of aggression, how to charge an act of aggression, but it was a difficult thing to prove, primarily because even though it was included, but it wasn't fully included in its full and understanding,
yeah.
Was that you also probably had to look at like the politics of the day, which is a bit funny because I don't know how coincidences always just stumble upon me. I say stumble upon me, or I stumble upon them.
The coincidence.
Because earlier today, remember when I texted you specifically in preparation for today's show?
Yeah.
I told you I was at a different event. I was at an event where the Vice Chancellor of UNAM, Professor Matengu, gave a speech in terms of the why of industrialization. Why should a country like Namibia industrialize? And he explained, he gave us there that little, you know, he got his PowerPoint out there in for the vice president.
Yeah.
And he got it, you know, he got it out there. I thought it was the president attending, and I come it was the vice president. Well, the thing is, you know, when you look at people from behind, you know, with just your bare eyes, mistakes can happen. I'm just saying, mistakes can happen. But anyway, so Matengu explained there. We explained what the Marshall Plan did, you know, and before World War II, what had happened. The best minds, the best scientific minds moved from Europe to America after the Second World War. Then funding and...
The best scientific minds?
Well, I don't know if Einstein was the best at the time, because...
Yeah, Einstein was the best, but just to put in mind, there was Operation Paperclip in there.
No, but there was a whole bunch of other German scientists, Helmut, that also ran away from Germany at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them went to, like I mentioned to you, to the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Some bounced off to Argentina and Brazil.
Yeah.
Some bounced off to Southern Africa.
Yeah.
Some bounced off to Canada and the UK. So it's a bit weird, because if you look at how the level of, let me rather say, forward thinking that the Germans had at the time, that the British could, for example, break and decipher the Enigma machines, the naval encryption machines used by the German Navy at the time during the Second World War.
Yeah.
But it was only possible if they could steal an encryption key. So you had to find the password book.
So jeez, man, those days were something else.
So they had to steal the password book.
You're not talking about what would be the equivalent of today's communication system, for example, like your encryption key. You're talking about a physical book.
Yeah, that was kept silent. And if you go 500 years before that, remember when I told you about the largest company, the Dutch East India Company?
Yeah.
How back in Europe at that stage, how protecting a trade route, a physical natural thing,
mm-hmm.
Was state secrets. And if you happened to sail by a country that was Catholic or Protestant, your fate depended on where you were in the Christian religion, in terms of where you find yourself. So if you were a Dutch sailing merchant ship, yeah, sailing down West Africa, and you decide to make a hard left, you know, sailing here past Cote d'Ivoire and Sierra Leone then you'd stumble upon, what's that island's name that I want to go to? Sao Tome and Principe.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd stumble upon them. That was an early Portuguese agricultural investment, what we now call like stimulating activities. It was one such particular aspect because Sao Tome and Principe was one of the earliest offshore territories of Portugal, mm-hmm, where they grew sugar and other agricultural products before they started realizing, you know, the human trading, a live human trading activity as, mm-hmm, a lucrative aspect. They started with it right there. It's Sao Tome and Principe, that archipelago of islands.
Yeah.
So if you were a Dutch merchant ship and you made a hard left, you would stumble upon that predominantly Catholic Empire outpost right there with a fort, with a naval fort. And a naval fort usually was it's worse than the speed humps on B1 because the speed humps on B1, you can't dodge them. Mm-hmm. The same too with a naval fort, you can't dodge it. The downside is, with the speed humps, you could slow down and you can survive passing through them.
Yeah.
With a naval fort,
you run into them, you're cooked.
Yes, because of their range. You know, they've got extensive range, unless you've got the ship that can outrun such gunfire. Yeah, it was a problem. So, if we look at that back then, even if it was just 80 years in that direction, things were tricky. But my discussion was predominantly based upon how you look at the intricacies of specifically whose laws would you use, because they were obviously trying to use international law. The downside was also, at the same time, there was another tribunal happening in Asia, which was the one for Japan, which was known as the International Military Tribunal for the Far East, was its name. And it was set up in Tokyo. Remember, Nuremberg is in Germany.
Yeah.
Tokyo is in Japan. The downside was Japan was not as occupied as Germany was, because it was only the Americans that technically occupied Japan. In Germany, Germany was technically occupied by three countries. The British and the US from one side, the Soviets from the one side.
Basically carving it up.
Yeah, that's why you had the weird thing of East and West Germany coming into fruition, which was also a problematic thing from the get-go. You can even just see that was a problematic scenario from the get-go.
But I think it still spilled into social and economic difference that's still present in modern-day Germany, between North and South.
It's not just that, Hamid, because if you go read because you're talking about, you know, the permeations that still exist. Yet they still exist, which also gives rise to why the political parties like the AfD them in Germany came about, because they're pretty strong in the east, apparently, in the eastern parts of the country, of Germany. But if you look at the European history in a nutshell, they are like I won't say undercover, because you don't hear it as obvious, but you could assume that it's there. For example, from 1945, the whole ambition of those three countries of that are on the Europe, that are on the Security Council, all those four countries, France, UK, US, and the Soviet Union, which is now today Russia, all of them, and even what's his name, Putin, cited this before they invaded, Russia invaded Ukraine.
Mm.
They cited this particular reason for the existence specifically of the UN is to avoid things like the Second World War and the First World War ever from happening again, which is not based on a scientific evidence, but based more on a learned experience of let's avoid world wars from the outset.
Yeah.
Let's avoid mass destruction of a country, mass destruction of various other countries bordering onto a country. Let's avoid mass loss of lives, which everyone thought the First World War, with its poetic name of the war to end all wars supposedly, ended up in the Second World War coming about just 20 years later on, and that war killed more people than the previous one.
Yeah,
and that one involved a lot more nations than the previous one. So then we sit with a scenario of, what does this ultimately look like? But it's one of the things of when you always look back at history, you find certain things fascinating, like the everyday negotiations and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, okay, so this was one of the ambitions. The downside, if we come to, like, for example, like the ICC, ICJ discussions, they get tricky because there's a whole raft of African countries, Helmut, that don't recognize, I think it's the ICC, because they had a little, the Wikipedia has a little infographic that shows all the shaded areas, all the shaded areas, the blue shaded, are countries that are signatories to the Rome Statute.
Yeah.
And the gray areas, which are just the default coloration, are countries who did not sign and who are not party to the thing. And it makes things tricky because it's in Namibia, in Southern Africa, it's Namibia, Botswana, the whole of SACU, basically. Namibia, Botswana, South Africa, Eswatini, and Lesotho. And then you can follow a little, but there's like a dividing line here in Central Africa, I think from Kenya-ish, and then it runs into West Africa, and then none of the North Africans. I think DRC is not there. Angola is not there. I think Zambia and Zimbabwe are not there. Mozambique is not there in SADC. But most of the EU and the Scandinavian countries and the UK, which makes things puzzling, because the countries today are both causing great consternation in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about Iran and the GCC, the Gulf, the Arab nations around Iran.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about them. Those guys are probably as innocent as what? As a child who was left with an AK-47, holding it, pointing it at some adults. They are as innocent as that child, because that child probably stumbled upon the weapon, didn't know what it is, and then just decided, because they realized, oh, it's this thing you must point at something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lined up, and then unfortunately, the little finger was caressing the trigger, but too hard, and then, a few shots.
Thing went off.
A few shots were popped off. So, when you look at the ICJ, it's a UN organ. That's it. It's a platform for disputes between countries. But those were some of the things. The downside was, for example, also the, not the ICJ, but that tribunal itself had a problem in terms of dealing even with the Armenian genocide, which was obviously something between the Ottomans, the Turks, the previous nation of Turkey, of Turkey, and what happened in Armenia, because Armenia was at that stage a colony of the Ottoman Empire. So, certain things obviously will never, never be resolved. I'm just expecting our particular limelight later this year, which is already happening since we're already in August. Saying later this year is just probably like, just glossing it over. you know, glossing it over, hoping it's next week or tomorrow.
Okay, look. One thing about international institutions is, it's very simple. I'm more often inclined to agree with Henry Kissinger that in the world of politics, you can write as much laws as you want.
Mm.
You can preach about those laws as much as you want.
Mm.
But there is going to be a time when everything is going to be determined by, you know, by the powerful guy's interest. Like we basically reminded earlier this year at the World Economic Forum in Davos. The World Economic Forum in Davos. By the McKenney, the Canadian Prime Minister, that international law will only protect you so far. Yeah. There is going to reach a time when you are actually in conflict, whether political or economically, with the big guy on the block.
Yeah.
And one thing that's been that we basically see as far we can go back as not very far as the First World War.
No.
Why did the League of Nations fail, for example? Because a bunch of guys, again, and this is the same thing that you see today. You have the UN Security Council, the guys whose sole job is to ensure the global security. And these are the biggest warmongers on the planet. They're just, running one proxy war after another. And they're supposed to be the adults in the room, and they are doing the complete opposite of that.
Mm.
Yeah, and
but we are also sending adults to the room, Helmut.
Yeah, look.
As long as it's not Tshisekedi and Kagame.
Here's the thing.
Because you can't lie that hard to us.
First of all, the African Union has the same problem that that the Gulf countries have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is just my opinion. I feel like for a country, the stupidest decision you can make is outsource your own security. Now, you can outsource anything to foreign countries, but your own security must be determined by your own manufacturing, your own training, your own everything.
Yeah.
If you outsource security, as in, I'll just have enough of my oil, of my oil money that I'll be paying to this military power, this billions of dollars a year. And in the event of any armed conflict in my country, I'll just summon them to come and help me. Now, here's what happened. That guy who the Arab countries, basically your UAE or Oman, your Saudi Arabia, they've been channeling all kind, large amounts of money to basically Western countries to protect them in the event of an armed conflict,
mm.
which is why they have a bunch of American military installations. Now, when that war started, now, what you have here is a problem, because, the Western country's last born is Israel. And, Western countries will protect you.
I thought it was us, Hamu.
Believe me, we're nowhere near. Western countries, now, the conclusion I've drawn from the Israel, Iraq, and Iran war is that Western countries will protect you from any country except Israel. If Israel comes knocking at your door, those guys are going to go bye-bye, if not just button up and sorry, buddy, but we're just going to have to kick you behind, even though we're friends yesterday. But that's why I'm more often, inclined all the time to basically agree with Henry Kissinger's point of view on politics, that in the world of politics, there is no such thing as permanent friends or permanent enemies. Well, the only thing that's permanent is one thing. That's interest.
Mm.
And you can just pick pick any example. With my favorite example of that is Noriega of Panama. The Americans basically prepped up and installed Noriega to lead Panama.
Mm.
And then they basically armed him to destabilize Nicaragua. And when he, I don't know what he did to turn against them, and he ended up running for his life. He was hiding in in a Catholic consulate, and where they had to DJ him out. And that's
you
my
and I
favorite.
I know what he was doing.
Exactly. Now,
he was in charge of the drug operations from Nicaragua.
Uh-huh.
And homeboy was skimming where he was not supposed to be skimming.
Uh-huh.
And then
somewhere, we are back to interest.
And then back somewhere in the US, someone went and said, you know what? We got to stop the drugs coming to America.
Yeah.
Well, our favorite Fall Guys right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just right there. And then if you can go back to, you know, Saddam Hussein, for example,
yeah.
They prepped him, armed him to fight the Iranians. And then, you know, fast forward to 1991, they were using a 16-year-old to accuse him of raping babies in, from incubators, in Kuwait.
Yeah.
And they, well, fast forward to 1991, you have Operation Desert Storm going on. 2003, they blow everything to smithereens, and to this day, they are still controlling a bunch of the Iranian oil money. So, every time an argument is brought up, every time I run into an argument that, you know what, I don't even know why the U.S. likes to fight war because they've never won a war.
Mm.
You can make that argument that the U.S. have never won a war. If you look at the wars they have fought militarily, then you can easily argue that they've never won a war.
Yeah.
But if you look at who controls the finances after the end of any war they have fought, who controls the financial architecture and infrastructure, you see that the U.S. have won almost every war they have gotten into. Because at the end of almost every war, if you look at Iraq, for example, you can say, okay, well, they were kicked big time. So, they basically left the country to ruins. But who's controlling the money?
Yeah.
They fought a war with Japan and then they lost. And now the American and Japanese economy are super intertwined. Same with South Korea and same with pretty much any country they have been at war. I'm more interested in who is controlling the money after than just bombs exploding and then one guy is declared the winner. Now, it will always be about interest. We can be friends today. The next day we are enemies just because, well, you are threatening my interest or the other way around. So for me, security is something you can never outsource.
Mm.
Don't ever outsource security because you're going to learn an Omani lesson or the Saudi lesson, where the best you can do is just condemn. That's also Africa, by the way. Yeah, we condemn in the strongest of terms. Yeah, right. And after what? Seriously, who came up with this English? We condemn in the strongest. That's a sign of you not having enough bombs. Because if you had the bombs, you would have fired them. Because you don't have any bombs.
But why would you be firing bombs to begin with? Which is a good thing, that you actually brought in, you know, don't outsource anything. Even your own goals or your own determinations.
No.
Because that's what the governor of Omeyeke for our discussion today, guys, was technically stressing.
I actually find it fascinating, but just the thing.
Yeah, because he technically is explaining the same thing that Helmut is now explaining, which is also don't outsource your economic, development or your growth or your industrialization trajectory.
Don't.
The downside is that, and for our listeners, I just want to.
Please let me do the intro, please.
You can do the intro.
Thank you. Now
you can do the. But why are you excited? I just want to say. I know we, Helmut and I, we do, okay, this is actually my
fault.
That
was our 20 minutes intro, don't worry.
we technically lined up also for the home run, these evaluations of these, governors' feedbacks. I'll be honest now already with governor number three right now, Helmut. It seems that, each region has basic infrastructure
issues.
When I say basic infrastructure, guys, I'm also talking about looking after like basic education and basic health outreach programs, looking after old people. I didn't see that much in last week's the one that we looked at for Oshana.
Yeah.
He didn't speak much about that, about the elderly, the welfare of the elderly.
Yeah, no, not much.
Yeah, but the governor for Omeyeke
and
Ngenate was, he started off from that particular thing, but it sort of like weaved into basic health outreach and early childhood December. Early childhood December. Early childhood development centers.
December is closed, man.
Early childhood December. You know, that's very far. You know, that's.
Nah, he's not far. So we're in August.
So things weaved in there in that one part of his particular feedback session, and he was still just on agriculture predominantly. It was a weaving of various things, but it was still concentrated on agriculture, which ultimately identifies what the region's biggest activity is.
Yeah.
And that's also where I tap into the census mapping exercise that the National Statistics Agency did back in 2022/2023. Mm-hmm. No, 2022, where they had to go and assess all businesses and all, if it's not residential buildings or mm-hmm. properties, mm-hmm. Né, then they assess it. So they weren't looking at anything residential. They were just going to assess or every building in each region, in the major settlements of a region, to see what is private, what is government. And cascading across, for example, like in that region, it was a predominant picture that most of the buildings, most of, if I can use the word, sectoral-based building, was predominantly government buildings. So this is also a thing where, which was part of his particular speech also, having to develop a private sector in that region
mm.
that just doesn't rely on one or two subsectors within the private sector cluster itself. But you can start with the intro, Helmut. It's good. So now stop making me famous. Switch over to you. Stop making me famous.
On today's menu here on Home Run, we have Omaheke Region's State of the Region Address. Now, State of the Region Address by the region's governor, Nganate, and just a number of people were in attendance. You had the mayor for Babis, that was Gariseb. Honorable Gariseb, but the honorable titles, you know, that's just a mouthful for me. That's now. So the whole State of the Region Address, of course, is just the governors following the legal mandate given to them by Article 110 of the Namibian Constitution.
Mm.
So you have the chairperson of the village councils were there, and it was like, okay, now this is a good thing. Have Oshinene, Vitfley, and Leonard Field. Now, Vitfley, on the other hand, that's an interesting one when he dove in deeper with regards to, especially when he started talking about there's a lot of copper deposits
yep.
in Vitfley, but they also seem to be having some kind of tit for tat with the farmers in that area. When it comes to exploring those, the available natural resources. And when he said that, I couldn't help but think, oh, hang on a second. Isn't this the same thing going on in Leonardsville with mm-hmm. the uranium explorations?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you have developmental discussions on a national level
mm-hmm.
and which in this case, specifically for the Omaheke region, this is, it's more regional for them. So you have the copper deposits creating some kind of attention between what the government wants to implement, developmental wise or natural resources exploration wise, and the farmers in that area, and you have the exact same thing going on in with regards to uranium exploration, and again farmers in Leonardsville.
Mm.
And, police commissioners were there. There's one gentleman who came from a national, from a correctional service. And one most important, attendee of this event, even more important than the governor himself, was, in his words, Comrade Wife. And you have now the theme of that event was unlocking Omaheke. Now, you want to bring all your English together for this one.
Unlocking?
Unlocking Omaheke's industrial potential through manufacturing and mining.
Yes.
Unlocking Omaheke's potential through manufacturing and mining. Then he went on to point out that the resources is there, but what matters most is how the resources is distributed. And then he went on to quote, I think that was Julius Nyerere. Yeah, and then he came back to point out that we are moving from planning to execution. By focusing on primary, I'm just going to end here. By focusing on primary manufacturing and mining, we look to build a foundation that will complement our agricultural strength, ensuring to add value locally to our raw resources. Okay, look at the balance here.
Rural, Helmut, what did you say?
Raw resources.
Oh, raw.
Yeah. Like a raw form, aka, you know, processing. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Let's go back to the copper deposits in Vitfleet and the uranium explorations in Leonardsville.
Mm.
There are two things that's very obvious here with regards to how two industries seem to be locking horns. You have farmers that are saying that are not very fond of anything mining exploration in the area, and you have now you have. The regional government all the way to the central government, if you look at the Leonardsville uranium explorations, really want to go on with the natural resources extraction. So now you have a little bit of a dispute here that, you know, these two basically have to come and see, because that's what one thing that the governor pointed out, especially in reference to the farmers in Vitfleet, that they must come to the table. Which I thought was, I'm going to look forward to how this is going to be settled, because the only farmer, what I would call agriculture versus mining type of locking horns that I was aware of was the Leonardsville and the uranium exploration discussion. But the Vitfleet one, the governor pointing that out, that was the first time I heard it.
But there's a big concern that the country is not acknowledging, and we're not hearing it from central government.
Yeah.
Central government is now specifically hell-bent on tapping into all the resources, and then we deal with
the aftermath
of anything afterwards. So,
we are hell-bent on industrialization, cost what it may.
Cost what it may, let it cause whatever potential fallouts, what
we'll
it may.
We'll deal with it after.
Yeah.
Ish.
The downside is, why I say that particular sentence, Helmut, is because when I did the sort of like the series of trying to understand the competition by the various sectors in the country for the same resource, land.
Mm-hmm.
Namibia, we're going to see now more heightened resource competition going to take place. So it's a good thing, and it's a good thing that Governor Nganate cited that particular aspect, the competition that exists already. Mm. He knows about the competition.
Yeah, he does.
His region is like ground zero of what we see in a silent manner across the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Now, it would take a different format depending on the region where you are. If you are in Zambezi, it would probably be a human-wildlife conflict. It would be nature conservation versus ancestral rights claims. It would be national development versus community-based development or community-based resource management, stuff like that. You know, it would be balances of that. And it would also be about the overarching theme specifically about how do you achieve your set goals for the people that are here today and still leave a region that is in a better condition for the generations to come.
Yeah.
Now, I always make a point every year when Nganate does his State of the Region address.
Yeah.
Is I want to know, because I want to know specifically of, and he speaks it in a pretty sort of like very, not informal, but his reporting is like very summarized. Just for this reason, it was, for this year, mm-hmm. it seemed that it was a little bit bloated on the backyard gardening, the nutritional yeah. development. That means so much activity had to take place between last year and now,
mm-hmm.
just in that, the food security dimension.
Yeah.
For his
because
region.
Every time the food security discussion comes out, yeah. it's his region.
Yeah. And last year, remember, when we did it,
just
and
decided
before,
to zone in and address that first.
Yeah. And last year, it was just an appeal. It was a plea he technically had. So he basically said that what we are now seeing real change from what he gave report back to back in last month between last year's address and this year's address. Real change specifically where he said that Omaheke is the country's largest agricultural, crop agricultural region
mm-hmm.
That is currently under irrigation.
Yeah.
It's the largest, it's the region with the largest agricultural crop cultivation projects under irrigation.
Under irrigation, yeah.
So this technically means it's beating, not combined, the green schemes that we've got,
yeah,
but it's beating them just in size.
On a regional
not
level.
Together, region to region,
yeah.
or vicinity to constituents, or whatever, landmass to landmass comparisons. It seems it's the biggest. Now, this is also changing the agricultural, the agricultural, it's in our description, the one that you sent. It's in, it's changing the agricultural profile.
Yeah, in terms of diversification from cattle to
from,
crop.
From just livestock yeah. farming to a mixed farming now.
Oh, by the way, they are also expanding the... now, he did say rabbit, right?
Yes. Rabbits and small goats and chicken coops and all those other things. A rabbit is now becoming also a kind of a... what you call it? A animal protein source.
Well, it has always been.
In Namibia.
Hmm?
In Namibia.
It has always been in Namibia. Look.
If you're talking about the amateur guy in that wants just something meaty to chew tonight there
yeah.
at home.
Yeah.
It's not what you would buy in the shop.
On a commercial level, no.
I'm starting from a commercial level because a commercial level helps to make something as accessible as possible.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because there's a lady I know who is also, she has, it seems from what I could deduce because we were just chatting, that's all.
is the way you're saying it that's making it worse?
In that other dimension, so that the listeners know, you know. But usually what I do is I try to understand what the person does also.
For a living?
For a living. And, you know, in her... past in her free time, she would, you know, tend supposedly to a rabbit nursery, some sort of a thing. Now, I know in Europe, rabbit meat is on the menu as an approved animal protein in Europe.
Yeah.
But the Europeans are almost obviously also trying to advance certain things and advance their diets because they are now on the level of phasing out beef from diets. And they are almost now busy researching how to technically 3D print a steak.
Yeah, I know I'm eating that, but go on.
Me neither, but they are going to move to a way, Hamoud, that we, as Namibia, won't be able to sell our red meat to them. Because they'll just switch on a button, poof, the thing is there. Which is just not... I mean, yeah. But yeah.
Look, it's not the technology I don't like.
It's the starting point.
Yeah.
If you don't want the product, don't import the product.
No, look, I know that for the Dwight, I love the technology of AI. I love the technology of lab made this, lab made that. Whether it's lab made chocolate, lab made beef. But the thing is, it's the motivating goal behind it. That's the problem. 90% of the times, that is about cutting input cost.
Yeah.
To maximize profit. So when that is the end goal, which is more often the case, no one really put enough emphasis into making sure that the product is good for consumption. As long as it's producing enough profit, just sell it and then deal with the cost, you know, deal with the consequences later. And all of the medical issues that arise from it, all kinds of health issues that arise from it, make as a pharmaceutical product that solves the problem and make even more money. That type of cutthroat capitalism is the one that I have a problem with. So when someone starts bringing up discussions of lab-grown meat, let's save the environment. Okay, now that's nice. So you are going to build this lab-grown meat using which technology? It's a technology that we're coming up with, which will be running on AI. So, right, now, just let's keep going here. Where are you going to be running this AI from? From a data center. Now, how much water does that thing need? Now, let's go back to how you care about the environment. Mm. You don't care about the environment, do you?
No, they don't. It has been proven, Helmut, even... Okay, besides the Peter Thiel ominous interview that he had with that journalist, where that journalist kept grounding him on, do you want humanity to survive?
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Thiel didn't want to answer because he went like, he does what I do. He, you know, when you can't say yes or no.
Yeah.
Guys, if you've... Helmut, I'm just bear with me. I'm going to share with our listeners.
Sure.
If you know both sides of an argument,
mm-hmm.
there's no way that an argument is perfect. An argument cannot be completely for without without identifying gray areas, and that these gray areas can cause harm.
Yeah.
And an argument cannot be completely against without also identifying the opposite gray areas that would exist in terms of where possible harm would also exist. It's one of the things specifically why I am impressed with humanity for developing the legal systems around the world.
Yeah.
Because if you think to yourselves, and I know I'm not speaking to the 15-year-olds, and I'm not speaking to the 25-year-olds who still are not listening in class, even though the lecturers are trying to share actual knowledge, what exists today in reality has been trial and error and trial and error and trial and error of every human system where you are today.
Yeah.
Now, in science, it's a little bit something else. We don't see it. You don't see a culprit. You don't hear about the extensive trial and errors. Because, for example, I'll be honest with people. I thought, for example, the AstraZeneca vaccine for COVID was the same, similarly concocted, fast-tracked situation. It was fast-tracked, yes, like the other vaccines.
Yeah.
Fast-tracked, vaccine that was probably a harebrained idea from one mad scientist who's trying to profiteer from this whole global crisis.
Yeah.
Just to realize that it was from a woman who had been researching all animal viruses from 1994, 1990 something. But this woman had developed a database so big, all it took for AstraZeneca from Sweden, that's the Swedish company's name, the pharmaceutical Swedish company, all it took for them was to say, hey, listen, here's the money. Get us a vaccine to respond to COVID. And she could basically identify all the telltale signs specifically needed in the what do you call it, that gene evaluation of a virus,
mm-hmm.
for them to develop something. That's why that vaccine was the only one of its kind that was made. Versus the other guys that had that funny thing.
Like a genome.
I don't want to use the genome discussion because I don't want to get too technical. The ones that the other vaccines were made of, the Pfizer's and the other, where they repeatedly now have to give you the booster shots every time. That was the guys that are constantly getting updates. And it was based upon how long the efficacy of the vaccine of those guys would last. And then you had the Russian and the Chinese vaccines that were based upon traditional vaccine production methods, which you could find anywhere. And I was like, wow, look at the level of, level of research that had gone into making this thing. But it's also safe to say that those centers, for example, because we are technically talking about manufacturing here, guys, even though it's pharmaceutical. And even though the governor in Ganate cited that the famous tagline, Helmut, that you helped share here live on air. The famous tagline of unlocking the potential through, you know, part of it and much of his
mining and manufacturing
and agriculture. But much of it was centered on manufacturing because he wants to see a manufacturing economy boom in his region.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here is
peanut butter factory.
You know?
A peanut butter processing plant.
Yeah, I was hoping because I was hoping that they would have already started something, but then when he said during his, you know, an hour later into the address, and he said, we still have to identify where to put the factory. I was like,
We just recently went to South Africa, met some potential, you know, homies that will be
willing to invest in the region and set
and
up
I was
shop
like,
here.
Right. So
and I was like, but I thought
we don't have the money, do we?
I thought, nah, we were at least somewhere.
No, we are nowhere.
So, that's primarily what he was citing and trying to build up from. Now, I was still on the discussion of coincidences as well, citing back to the event I came from today. Another particular coincidence, Helmut, that speaks to what Governor Ganate cited was also what the vice chancellor for UNAM, Matengo, also cited earlier today, was that they both say, we've got to learn to do our own research. We've got to learn to document our own developments. We've got to learn to discover our own things. We've got to learn to do our own trial and error. For example, let's say that peanut butter factory is not feasible in one part of the region, but it fits in very well in another part of the region.
Just to keep
it. Yeah. No, but you realize when you built it here, because you thought option A for location was the most feasible, most viable, had all the hallmarks of what needed to be done. But then you realize, and then you potentially realize, in 3 years' time after the thing is operating, there's some sort of a devastating disaster that hits the region, and the thing can just no longer, you know, get back on its feet, you know, in terms of operations. And then you realize another part, which was supposedly scoped as location option B, is now thriving and it's just running, you know, full steam ahead and it's just flying with full colors, going ahead economically and all that. It's one of these particular trade-offs. You're not always certain whether or not what you're going to do is going to result in the necessary particular, you know, goals and the likes. There's a document I once read, Helmut. Okay, it wasn't a document. It was actually an article. Because I kept seeing in these American-made TV series that we love to consume, you know, whether you're watching Netflix or whether you like Dwight watching on your illegal Russian movie sites. And even in that one YouTube channel that's based from America where they're trying to find ways of rethinking American town planning. Is America has got so many abandoned industrial locations in cities, in small mining towns, in agricultural towns. So many abandoned industrial sites, empty warehouses, dilapidated infrastructure, which are built on harbors and on jetties of major port cities.
So at some point there were port cities.
They were thriving. They were thriving warehousing industry. They had a thriving warehousing industry. All those things. Have you ever wondered, Helmut, how does it that a Hollywood can just have access to a whole warehouse, net so much just like that, boof, for a movie scene? Then you realize these things are just standing there.
Yeah.
These things are just standing there. Now Europe is the same.
So they have an entire city to shoot a zombie movie.
Basically, you can also based upon whatever you can do, primarily, you know, have various kinds of scenes in various kinds of locations that would fit and give you an adequate setting for your movie. And one of the dimensions that that YouTube channel that I cited mentioned, it was in one of their smaller videos because they make like these 8-minute videos, was that how to best utilize abandoned industrial locations of your urban settlement. There was another video. It was a 3-minute video, Helmut, of a guy that just uploaded it to his own YouTube channel. Because if you're a Gmail user or Google account user, you get a Gmail account, a YouTube account as well.
Yeah.
This guy just uploaded this video, and like, you know, almost what Google does or YouTube does. They start suggesting things because you watched funny children's jokes video here. Now you start watching all funny children's video jokes, and you're like, what's going on here? Why am I being suggested everything or being shown everything? And one of them was a video of a guy who drove last year in rural America, a town that's 90%. It's a small town, Helmut. It's literally the size of who can I pick? Let's say this the size of Divundu. 90% abandoned.
Jeez.
90% empty houses, just standing like that, guys. 90% abandoned. Now, we keep talking about our rural to urban migration dilemmas.
Yeah.
The worst example is the US.
They have it bad.
They have it bad. You just don't hear about it. It happens in the US. It happens in the UK. It happens in Europe. Go to Italy. My sister met a... It was an Italian intern. It was a young lady coming here to Namibia. And she worked for the CS, one civil society organization that was working with women's affairs. And what me and my siblings always like doing, we like having conversations with complete strangers sometimes, just see where you're from, what you're doing here in Namibia and stuff like that. And then my sister discovered that this Italian, when she asked, you know, where do you come from in Italy? What's your town like? What's your town life like? Many small towns in Italy are virtually abandoned except for just the elderly living there. Not even married couples with kids living there anymore. Just the elderly, Helmut.
That's dark.
Now, if you see scenarios like that, in terms of how bad rural to urban migration is in developed countries, advanced economy countries, countries that are in the G20 and G7, khutasa, ne? Which is one of the particular things that Namibia is trying to identify here. We obviously need, for example, like the feedback that the governor gave. Now, the governor was focusing greatly on agricultural developments taking place. And it's an interesting thing, Helmut, that you mentioned that copper...
Deposit.
Do you know how big that copper deposit is?
No.
I explained it to you once. It's the massive copper deposit when we were looking at the report. It wasn't that report. It was after I came back from that event the previous night. I went and looked at why the vice director, the deputy director of the company, that Head Springs company that the governor also spoke about for their uranium exploration, why she mentioned that Botswana was also going to use in situ leaching resource extraction on the other side of the border. And I was like, what? And then when I looked at it, and then a basic Google search brought up what were the major mining developments in Botswana. There's a massive copper deposit, Helmut. It runs for at least 800 kilometers in length from just below the Okavango Delta. Now, what I'm picturing to you, sorry for the listeners and the watchers on our social media. Imagine left to right, my left hand is Botswana and where the Okavango Delta is. And where that copper deposit ends is here close to Witvlei. It's a massive copper ore that runs like that. And it's like 800 kilometers in terms of the width of the deposit.
Mm.
I won't call it a super deposit, but it is a massive deposit. And how far from the Namibia-Botswana border they're trying to use in-situ leaching is like 300-something kilometers into Botswana. They're trying to use in-situ leaching. So in terms of developments...
Okay, let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just give more eyes Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
My man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Pata Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatuime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko Derewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Welcome back. We are 2 minutes into the hour of five. You are still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. And today's topic is basically running through updates, developmental updates, and in terms of progress and challenges coming out of the Omahege region as per the Governor Nganate's update. So, yeah. Botswana, in situ mining.
Yeah, so... The governor is right that there is potential to tap also into mining's potential for the region. I also primarily believe, I believe in his particular conviction of diversifying away also from agriculture.
Yeah.
Specifically in, if you look at Erongo, to be honest, Erongo has both tourism, nature conservation, and mining across its region. Erongo is just going to continuously get more mining activities thrown at it. It'll have five in future, five potential just completed uranium projects alone. Uis is going to become a town now because there's going to be a lithium mine, which Helmut and I, we have dissected countless times. We keep referencing it. It's a lovely report if you want to read about it.
Oh, it is a wonderful one. Lovely Please report. Check it out.
That's why we love the Standing Committee's reports and the Auditor General's reports.
Yeah.
They're trying to be the best at being neutral, except for the Auditor General's reports, which are
Auditor General just goes on full on frying pan.
Yeah, and they, I mean that's blue on blue shooting, but you know it's accepted blue on blue. So violence. You know?
Look, to be fair, the Auditor General just only has a gun. The guys keep supplying the bullets.
Yeah, so friendly fire and, you know, and own goals, you know.
Come. Yeah, own goals, they have a ton of
goals. And friendly fire is a thing from those reports. So I believe the governor is right. My concern, just in terms of what the governor's actual concern is balancing the human relations in his region. There is a good example, Hamid, why I'm getting to that. Remember the story that he explained about a quote that was given to the regional ministerial outlet for a specific, you know, for specific hardware or for specific things.
Oh, yeah, when
and
he said
the price was in the
went to heaven.
The price was, and I first sat there frowning, going like, what did you mean it went into the heavens? And I went like, oh.
When some people are quoting the government.
When some people are quoting the government, they charge into the heavens. But when he showed up, there's the governor. And he said, okay, give a price to us, the governor's office.
Yeah.
And
don't think Minister of Finance. Just think the governor's office.
The governor's office of Omahek. He said then the price came down to more earthly expectations, you know.
Yeah.
It was here grounded on earth. And look, there's nothing he can do. There's no written rule in the Namibian constitution that says you may not be greedy. Let's be honest, guys. There is no written rule in the Namibian constitution that says that one of the human sins, that one of the seven sins of humanity, which I as a Catholic and many of you as a Protestant learned about, is not chargeable under law. There's nothing illegal about greed.
I mean, even if you wrote that down, you will have to be very specific in your explanation as to what constitutes greed. Yeah. And the technicality will just make you throw everything away and say, you know what, let's just use common sense in this one, because it's just too broad to be specific in terms of laying down the legislations.
Exactly. And if you know that the exercise of what a government official has to do in terms of sourcing competitive pricing, there's also nothing you can do if I run the same business, Helmut runs the same business, the government official comes to me first asking a quote, and they explain what it is for. I tell them, I give them the price, I give them the quote, and I have topped up by 50% on my price.
Mm-hmm.
I will call Helmut and tell him, Helmut, listen, I suggested that they also go get a quote from you, because you're my direct competitor.
Yeah.
I charge them 50, you do the same as well. That does happen in Namibia. Collusion, price collusion does happen. The NACC, the Namibia Competition Commission, they have come across such particular accusations which were filed with them. Do you know what's another funny thing that I also read about specifically, Ahmed?
Price collusions?
On price collusion. Was it a Japanese entity? Yeah, it was a Japanese entity. How they were brought together by an industry in terms of basically acknowledging each other's pricing structures for the same products, because they were all competitors in the same market. I just don't know if it's the US or in Europe or in the UK. They participated in it. They evenly distributed customers to each other.
Sharing is scary.
They literally distributed customers to each other. This association of similar businesses.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't know what collusion is, guys, what's that? That is on an advanced economy. So, I mean, that's why I said his biggest concern is right now.
Yeah,
managing community expectations of the government, managing inter-community relations between communities in his region, managing the everyday Omaheke resident relations with between him and them, he's the regular residents. And then he's probably got to put on a different hat and become a project manager as well. I'm gonna leave it right there, because there are other things that Helmut also has to get into specifically before I start, you know, just running away with my chariot and horses, chariot and donkeys. Sorry.
Okay. There's one interesting part about what the governor brought up about the backyard gardening. Yeah, now the backyard gardening is something that is more observable in the region, in the village of Okorukurure.
Yeah, Hamud, I
Okorukurure.
It was
not
just that spot. There was another spot also.
There was another spot, but he kept referencing this one. But one thing about this backyard gardening that caught my attention is because we keep bringing it up here, especially in Ebenwintu. In terms of we need more backyard gardening, but it's working for villages like Okorukurure, because that's a village. And
the same for Ocean Binde that you mentioned?
The thing is, they have, they're basically looking, you know, they basically have two ways of irrigation. You have, you know, the natural and the artificial one, aka you have a water pump and water pipe set up for your own, you know, well, irrigation. And you have, you know, the some that are still depending on the, or waiting for the rain. Now, the term that he used was rain-fed. Now, look, I understand that the main focus, I think for the most part, one thing that I picked up from the governor was that the main focus in terms of, you know, of more like pointing to the success that the region has had in terms of combating one of the problems that is more prevalent in his region, which is food insecurity and malnutrition. Mm. So bring up discussions like agricultural initiatives, like having one of the biggest crop projects under irrigation.
Yeah.
And which is a good thing, because the region is known for its massive animal husbandry farming. So that speaks to agricultural diversification, which is a good thing. And I have to go back to.
It's good. You have that liberty.
Yeah. Oh yeah, let's start from here. Food security. The office of the governor. The office of the governor has it's in a three years partnership agreement with Swakopmund Uranium Foundation to support the development of farm. What's that farm? New Hope.
New Hope, yes. Yeah. But in Afrikaans, it's Nieuwe Hoop.
Never what? Never what now?
Never whoop.
Yeah.
Just say whoop.
Well, the whole time I was listening to this, I couldn't help but think about, is this the state of the region address or the state of the Never Whoop address?
Because Never Whoop was being promoted there as the core agricultural new trend-setting food security.
Oh, yeah.
Nutrition,
employment creation, opportunities for the youth, you name it.
Everything is on farm Nieuwe Hoop.
Yeah. Now,
it really sounds like a new hope.
Oh yeah, it does. Yeah. So, one of the, he actually did point to several initiatives taking place at Nieuwe Hoop.
Wait.
What?
Isn't Nieuwe Hoop the farm for the Sun community there?
Oh.
Yeah, I have to look that up just to be sure.
Yeah. So, development at Nieuwe Hoop, rehabilitation of two boreholes and a water dam expansion and improvements in greenhouses. Excellent example. Yeah, greenhouse, and then you have expansion of a chicken coop, and expansion of a chicken coop, and you have a rabbit production unit. I was like, we really are diversifying on this one. We are not kidding. A goat kraal expansion to the capacity of 180 goats. But my favorite part is an acquisition of 100 poor goats, which were acquired. That will bring the region more and more closer to the vision of one glass of milk per child per day. Okay, now that's awfully specific.
It's actually a good target.
I
was just wondering about distribution.
I'm more interested in the size of the glass.
Well, you heard Mr. Half Full, Half Empty.
Oh yeah,
quote that. At the start
really
of the engagement.
Point that one.
At the engagement, because
optimist and pessimist.
You know, which way? You know, it depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, and then he came to the topic that you just pointed out earlier in terms of thinking about where do you wanna be when you retire, and one question he asked in reference to old age home was, There's this old age home. There's this old age home that is said to be renovated and also acquire new furnitures. And one question that he asked, that was the Epaco old age home. And one question that he asked was that some of the places that we are building, I don't think we will feel comfortable staying in these places. And one of the reference that he made was take the Epaco old age house, for example. I don't know how dilapidated that place was, but he was like, we are promoting these places to, where people are supposed to go and when they are in retirement. But does any one of you feel like they would be comfortable, if other options were available, would they go to the Epaco old age house?
Yeah.
And I can only take it from the silence of the crowd that the answer was no.
It's a good thing he cited an old age center. One thing that I also realized that didn't happen in the Oshana and in the Comas regional addresses was they didn't actually talk about the other spectrum of our vulnerable populations of Namibia.
Children and the elderly.
You've got children at the lower end,
yeah,
at the starting end,
yeah,
and you've got the elderly at the exiting end.
Yeah.
It's all good and well to promote and sing and dance youth interventions left, right, and center. But the actual intervention for the youth is supposed to come from their parents. Let me be brutally honest as well. Yeah. Your actual intervention is supposed to come from your parents. Your parents are supposed to be working for you. Let's understand this, Almon. Mm-hmm. It's a brutal realization that also, slapped me a few times for a few years in my face directly. And how your parents set you up for the economy that you have to go and participate in was their responsibility, not the government's responsibility.
Oh boy, am I glad you brought that up.
Because Helmut, we have to look back at the households that we come from, all of us. We have to do this a lot.
Yeah.
And one of the things that always annoyed me was how it was easy for a complete stranger. Yeah, I miss the sarcastic quips that President Kainkop gave of reality. For example, the famous one that was contained in the one daily newspaper about informal housing, and he asked, now who said you must go and live there? And another famous one was the young man, was it Noka Hanya, who came up and said, yeah, what about the enlarging or, increasing the old age pension contribution? And then he asked, why are you asking for it? Because it is an honestly suspicious question to come from a young, able-bodied man, yeah, asking on behalf of his elderly parents or grandparents, because why are they not asking for it? Why is he asking for it? What's he doing with his productive time? How's he being productive?
I'm representing my grandma here, Mr. President.
Totally understandable, Hamoud, but then you can't ask the question. That's the thing.
Well, the thing is, my grandma can ask the question, but then it will be in Timbukushu, Mr. President. You're not going to hear a thing.
But there will be someone to translate for him. Don't you worry, Hamoud. But
yeah,
that's why I said I miss his sarcastic quips, his firing backs, because they were all based in logic.
Yeah.
That's why you can always see through, the responses that he would give people that were asking questions. And one of the nice things, obviously, was, not nice things, but it was a pretty damning thing that he also said one time, that one about he will only be judged and assessed by Western, non-Namibian academics. That was based upon sort of like the, assessment of his particular development policies in Namibia.
Yeah.
That was in his first term as well. That particular article that came up was in his first term, which speaks volumes today in 2026. It speaks volumes today in 2026 because he was trying to achieve a level which you could see through his particular, what he was trying to champion in his development talk and his development policies,
yeah,
was rapid integration of Namibia. Everyone should technically achieve a level where everyone is benefiting. But I don't want to say this. It's because I'm not going to say it. But it's a little bit tricky if there was also a different side to your reputation, specifically as a political leader.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to keep it that way. That's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to stop my sentence there. We obviously have a new dimension to work with, but you get a sense of understanding where Namibia and its liberty for demanding things is coming from. The liberties that you see in so many Namibians, younger Namibians and so forth, yeah. The liberties they take. Because we have to ask a question, Helmut. If you are demanding something, what are you doing to improve your position? Because the government will be able to, let's say through a local authority, be able to clear virgin land for mass housing. But if the mass housing has to be somehow recuperated in costs, let's for example say it's just services. Yeah? You're just paying for water and electricity to that local authority. You got the property, the finished structure for free. Everything. Mm. You got it for free. Depending on your station in life, depending on your job in life. But you don't know that you've got to pay water and electricity. And your water gets disconnected because you're not paying water and electricity. And your electricity gets disconnected because you're not paying for that. How then can we take this country forward if we don't understand the basics of the contract of purchase and sale? You need to pay for what you're consuming. Or you need to pay for the thing if you want to gain access to it.
Yeah.
Now, the government understands it clearly. But we've got so many communities in this country, and I say across the country, who don't understand the basis to advance is modernization. And to modernize means taking you from a hut that you built by hand because you were trained by your parents were trained by their parents.
Yeah.
We know about the hut structure. It's affordable. It's cheap. You can access the materials from nature. But now the government says, no. We must do away with this hut business. This sticks and stones and thatch roof bizarre must just come to an end now.
Yeah.
We don't want you looking like a possible cause for becoming, a kebabs in ash and hot ash and charcoal. We want you to live in a formal structure. We want to see actual modernization of housing, even in the most basic context. But you don't want to pay for the water and electricity that they want to connect to you.
Look, I believe, I don't know about other continents, but for Africa, for the most part, including Namibia, when it comes to a lot of people having that point of view, I blame politicians.
Yeah.
Because shortly after independence, you guys lied a lot about what you can do and what you cannot do. For a very long time, you kept saying, if you vote for me, I will create employment. Dude, you don't even own a bar. And it's lies like this, every one of you will get a house. Every one of you will get a farm. Mm. And after decades of a lot of people making those types of promises, which they kept failing on in terms of fulfillment because they are borderline impossible coming from someone without any type of funding.
Mm.
For a lot of people, they still look at public officials for the most part as saving them from all kinds of economic issues that they face. The bottom line is, most of the public officials are just as broke as you are. Mm. All developmental projects are funded by taxpayers, which is why they have, you see the Minister of Finance doing the budget unveiling every year. And she does, she or he, depending on who is in office, explains how much of this money is acquired. And that's where, institutions like NAMRA comes in handy.
Yeah.
So, I think for a very long time, a lot of African leaders made that very terrible mistake of making promises they knew they couldn't keep. Not because they didn't want to. I'm pretty sure a lot of them wanted to, but then they realized that once they got into office, then they realized that, not only was it difficult to implement all the promises they've made because they're just not enough money to go around fulfilling all those promises. They also had one giant problem, which was also emphasized by Governor Ganate, which was this, we don't have the luxury to play politics.
Yeah, he was appealing.
Yeah. No, those were shots being fired.
I know those were intended shots.
Those were intended shots.
And I think it's one of the reasons why the counselor for Vatfle was not there and the other counselor that were also not there. Who was the other counselor, Hamad? The other
It reminded me of that state of the region address. Was that for
2024?
Is it Karas region?
For 2024, when the former governor, Aleta Fredericks, stood there and said, "But by law, I'm actually empowered to be here, but the chairperson of the council didn't want me to give this address."
Yeah.
I don't know where that chairperson got that random idea.
One thing that was even more ridiculous was the excuse that the chairperson used for not attending the event.
Yeah.
That the governor does not have the power to do that. And the governor was like, well, according to Article 110 of the Constitution, since you're asking for power.
Yeah.
So that also draws a very terrible picture about how honorable chairperson doesn't actually understand why.
Or they don't read. You know, Google search will help you sometimes.
Please, for the love of God, just Google.
Just Google and read. I mean, Namibia's, in actual fact, Namibia's acts are not confusing. They're not convoluted. Yeah, I'll give you warnings for...
The English.
No, not just the English. The what's that act? The one with the massive additions and constant
amendments.
Update. Yeah, it's the Environmental Management Act. There's another act, the Related Tax Acts.
Mm-hmm.
There's another act also that is the Mining Acts, the Mining Related Acts.
Yeah.
And then there's another one. There's a final one. They're like it's like massive ones. Even the Public Service Act. Watch out for that act as well. And yes, the Local Authorities Act, the Public Service Act, the other one is related to the Regional Local Authorities Act, because they constantly get updates and new additions and amendments to them. Go read them, because they pertain for you, local councillors and politicians from the constituencies of this country. It pertains to you guys. So I don't know how you guys go and participate in legal platforms without knowing these acts. Please go read them. Just go read them. It will change your life greatly. You'll also know how not to end up as ACC's, you know, favorite politician of the year or the month. Since ACC has now been enacted or empowered to do its job.
Assuming that, Al Jazeera doesn't get to you first because those guys are brutal.
No, man.
They'll make a documentary out of you.
Because we have to understand some of these things in terms of how appointment of people take place in these smaller local authorities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Omururu was one good example. Was it the start of this year or at the end of last year? The accusation that was cited there by the ACC was this person that was a former CEO or former mayor, how she appointed her brother in the local authority.
Sri Lanka.
Look, nothing beats Namibia, eh? Namibia just knows how I'm out. If you hear a Sri Lanka reference, then Namibia takes it into another direction. But yeah.
Yeah, so, I totally agree with the governor in terms of we don't have the luxury of playing politics. But now, when you look at it, it becomes also very interesting in terms of the dilemma that a lot of public officials tend to face when they find themselves in office.
Mm.
Because on one side, they have to be subservient to their political party, which is a vehicle that got them to that particular office. And on one side, they have voters that are also followers of that political party. So now, it sort of like puts you in between a rock and hard place where you like have two masters to serve.
Yeah.
And this is, again, one thing that I, at least personally, have come to observe for a lot of public officials when they get into office. And especially, and this is very, you know, this is very common. You see this a lot in American politics. Where they are very transparent with regards to who is funding which politician. And, I mean, it's a very painful reality, but I like that level of transparency. Because now you have voters that are just saying, You know, that can clearly see that this political party is running, this politician or this individual is running for this political party and is running against that individual. And this is how much money they have acquired from these entities and so. So it's a lot of interesting information for that commercial break.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today. Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. So we continue. Where was I? So the dilemma of being a politician, you get into office, now you have to, you look at your campaign contributors and go like, okay, these guys are coming with their interests. Okay, you know what? I funded you, financed your campaign. So you have to do this and this, bro code for me. And on one side, you have the voters that, helped vote you into office, which I find very interesting in terms of, of trying to understand power, because you have you have the financing guy that gave you money to reach your voters. And you have the voters that voted you to reach the office. Now, you need both the money and the voters. Now, how the heck do you save the two? Now, one thing that we are seeing, especially those of us that like to follow, global politics, especially what's going on in the US, is you have a lot of people that are being, that are being funded to the tune of millions of dollars in US, and they are losing elections. Because voters don't like the donors of the donors of these politicians. And a lot of people are losing elections out of that. And it is slowly becoming a very interesting aspect of American politics. Now, so, and on one side you have a politician, and on one side you have voters. So, one thing that I find very fascinating, especially with the recent, Abdul Al-Sayed in Michigan and that lady that he was running against, the one who is seeing Israel in her dreams. Like, look, I would have been a better liar. That lady is just terrible at lying. If I was her campaign contributor, I would have gone asking for a refund. Now, look.
If I was even a campaign advisor, I would have said, listen.
Just for the love of God,
let me write all those speeches, please.
Please.
If you're going to say things like that.
There's ChatGPT today.
That says, well, how does ChatGPT know what's going on in your head, Helmut?
No, I'm an AI campaign speech would have been better. Because what that lady was yapping was just, no wonder she lost. But the thing is, one thing that you see is that, when you look at American politics, especially in relation to the ongoing elections, especially, the general one will take place, I think, somewhere in November for the Senate. Now, what I'm seeing is you have money on one side and you have voters on one side. And because I think a lot of people, a lot of people have, in the US have been asking a lot of questions with regards to where are our taxpayers going, our tax dollars going? Because this is how much taxpayers' money that we are giving per year.
Yeah.
But we have a dilapidated infrastructure and terrible service provision, and the ones that are not terrible are expensive that none of us can afford. Now, for a bunch of these questions, I think for an extended period of time have remained unanswered because of that, which is why it's very easy right now to go against the, to go against the establishment. Because, after a very long time of not answering those questions, anyone that's going to come in and be anti-establishment will just use those unanswered questions against the administration. And it's not really surprising to see basically the entire crowd is following the one that's not being financed to the tune of millions of dollars. So I think it's safe to say this is one thing that we are observing in Africa, because for a very long time, especially in the beginning, as a lot of Africans began to acquire their independence, a lot of people did not understand politics to the way that they understand politics today. For a very long time, a lot of public officials were, especially the higher the office you occupied, they were seen as some type of, divine beings or something. It's like you can't.
No. From what I saw, Helmut, I'm sorry. From what I saw, it was more like a rock star celebrity.
Rock star celebrity.
Yep.
Now,
I went to a school where ministers' children were on the school. The only people who didn't take heed of these kids, and who their parents were, were like some of the teachers. The teachers didn't care. Some of the teachers, they didn't care.
The kids.
If the kids knew who your parents were, your dad was a minister or your mom was a minister. Okay, predominantly would have been a man being a minister back then in the 90s into the early 2000s. Then you were this rock star, this rock star kid.
Just on account that your father.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that one of the guys in my class in grade 11 at that stage was like one of the grandkids of the founding president.
Mm-hmm.
It was because he was picked up every day by a police van. But it was like one person picking him up.
Mm-hmm.
And you would just think there's any random, teenager. Oh, yeah, okay. So his dad probably works in the police.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a high-ranking official in the police. Just for his best friend, who I bumped into, incidentally, 2 years back at Ministry of Finance's Inland Revenue Cashier Department, explained to me, no, that friend of mine is one of the grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you're lying. He said, no, Dwight, you didn't know. Say, why would I talk? I told him literally, but the two of you were like two weird nerds. I can be a nerd now, but they were two weird nerds just sitting there one time. I was like, okay, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. So scenarios like that. But that
so
kid,
they were given the high, they were basically put on a pedestal.
Yeah, no, but that kid that I mentioned now,
he
was so below the radar. You didn't even know you accepted him for who he was, and it was a friendly guy.
I went to school with one of those, and when I tell you she's smoking hot, and she,
I didn't even know that President Pwamba's daughter won Miss Nas or was Miss Polytech.
Yeah,
in her first year, and I was like, who? No, the president's daughter won Miss Nas. Where?
I think the flying under the radar is their thing. Like
she was the short. She was.
You met a short one. believe me.
I didn't know she was, but I just saw like randomly one short girl.
Look. The point I was driving to is for a very long time. If you were in public office, you were revered to a near divine level. And the more people basically, and this I think is one of that, the evidence of our rise literacy rate.
Yeah.
When the literacy rate basically went up, a lot of people basically came to realize that, being in public office is not being next to Jesus. It's being in a position where you have to represent the public.
Yeah.
So if anything, he has to listen to you.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, he is managing your affair on your behalf as an ordinary Namibian, because, one, you voted for them. And even if you did not vote for them, they are in public office. Their mandate is to serve you. So, and by the way, as much as they ran around during the campaign to promise you heaven and earth that they will bring for you if you vote for them, they don't have the money to afford all that things. Mm. Every development that they are going to quote unquote bring is going to be financed by either the money that will have to be borrowed or the money that will come from central government, none of which is coming personally from him.
Mm.
When you think it that way, and I believe that for a very long time, a lot of people came to that realization that your public officials is not something that you should run away from. It's someone that you should basically have a conversation with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't bite.
No, they don't. Mm-hmm. But it's also a scenario, Hamut, of understanding professionalism.
Yeah.
Because if you realize you're in a position, you're being paid to do a job.
Yeah.
You've got to act. You've got to perform. Now, it's been a question that I've seen even in local Namibian media.
Yeah.
But you don't have to ask the person in terms of why you're not doing their job, because that person will put up a defense.
Okay. You know what? That is because a lot of us are not interested in, you know, we have this mentality of, I'm not interested in politics. So, look, if you don't know
you're jumping the other fence.
No, look, I'm pointing that out because Dwight, if you don't understand what projects are running in your constituency or in your region, and you run in your public representative, what question are you going to ask?
Very good question, Amut.
Yeah.
Because you're right in terms of the, you know, sort of like the, what's that word?
You just go straight to, you are from that party. Oh, come on.
Yeah. Or you are from that side of the train tracks. Or you're from that side of town. I don't even need to care. I've got mine. I'm sorted. But it's also a different kind of discussion. If you were someone that was aware of, let's say, your political party's developments and achievements.
Yeah.
The one key thing that the one positive that we hammered on, and luckily we still have, I think we still have those on our website, the Eagle FM website, the manifestos of the parties when we uploaded it. That was a good trend to set because now we can actually evaluate the winning party based upon what they did. Now every voter, it's now 2 years from now, right? When is the next election? How did we calculate it? 2024 for 2025. So we've got to see 2029 for 2030. Okay. So, and then 2030 for 2031, local authorities. So we've now got to view, because, 2026 is from 2025's local authority elections, So we've now got to view how these trajectories, meaning we've got to evaluate every year, technically, let's say the governor in Ganate's message every year when the state of the region addresses come about. We've got to see whether or not Governor Ipinge's message changes from just public sector employment creation to public and private. Remember what was our core concern last week? He goes and says, Oshana region created 120 permanent jobs. And what was the town council's name? Oshakati is a municipality. Oshakati municipality created, or is it a town council?
No, relax.
Okay, whichever one.
Relax,
And then Oshakati created 120 permanent jobs. I was like, no, brah, you can't just report on that dimension. You need to have a 360 economic degree perspective.
A total of 120 permanent jobs and 1,681 temporary jobs were created across the region through various projects.
Yeah.
Oshakati Town Council created 120 permanent jobs. I was like, okay, when you say, 120 permanent jobs and 1,681 jobs were created across the region.
Mm.
And then we go with Oshakati Town Council created the 120 jobs. So the
region's actually, target is represented by one local authority.
Exactly. You get the point. Look, at least you have the 1,681 that is now, across the region. The 120 is just unique to one town council. The rest of you is, you go instant porridge type of jobs. And, okay, that was not fair. Well, at least we spend an hour in
instant porridge job. Helmut, no. No. Helmut, no. Do you know that we will be grilled after this for that?
It's a good thing the camera is not on me.
Oh, no. Guys, I didn't say it. I didn't say instant porridge jobs.
Look, man, I know we want to build the industry, but most of the construction jobs are based on per project.
Yes.
Yeah. So that means at the end of it, you are an employer.
Yeah.
At the end of the project that you're given, if you're able to build a school, a hospital, for example, at the end of that project, you're going to have to apply for another tender. And sometimes, well, you get a yes, sometimes you get a no. Now, in the event that you get a no, how are you going to keep your workers? You can't, because you not that you don't want to, you just can't afford them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, that means that the employment you created
can only buy instant porridge.
Yeah.
Savage but true. Savage but true. No, it's a reality, because the block plus block equals unblock is not working.
It's clearly
not working. And I don't know what Donald Trump is thinking. Is he thinking that all of us are living on air? Does he really think that all of us live on air?
Look, the guys, I mean, there are a bunch of guys that are making a lot of money from the speculations coming out of the block equals unblock. And the which is very, 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 very diabolical. So, employment creation. And then, let's go to the part that I was looking forward to, you know. But then when, as in all the state of the region address, it's one of those things that the governor just glossed through. And again, like I pointed out, last week with regards to the Oshana State of the Region address.
Yeah.
And I understand the governor doesn't have the time to go into the details of each and every topic that he brings up development-wise, whether it's coming out of agriculture, employment creation, youth empowerment, the houses for the elderly, or the institutions for the elderly, or institutions for, for children.
It's known as old age.
Old age homes, not institutions. They're not cuckoo. This just, I'm not helping my case, am I?
No. God, no. Because you do know that you and I, we will live in something like that.
Which is why I really support...
As long as I have my computer with me.
If I have my computer with me, I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that I say that out loud.
Yeah, we're not there yet, don't worry. So,
and also not that kind of a good time. I'm talking about, playing video games and stuff.
That's why you just slide on.
Just the governor along. So, moving on. The part that I was looking forward to, and when the governor reached that part, I was like, "Yo, now I need more information on this." And then he just, slides all across was this part. The copper deposits in the area of Vitfle, farmers seem to be not very huge fans of everything extractive related activities near their farms. Which is a very good argument to make, because let's face it, balancing farming and mining, especially if you're talking about open pit type of mining, it's kind of very tricky to reconcile these two to coexist in the same environment. So the governor's right. Now the farmers and anyone that's planning all kinds of extractive industry initiatives, they must really sit and talk, which I believe the Headspring guys basically did.
Yeah.
Because they met with the farmers, and then the farmers were like, "Oh, you want to explore? Sure, go ahead." And then they were exploring. The farmers were busy. They, buying land cruiser, and the guys were like, Headsprings were like, "All right, we're done here. We're now moving to the next fence." It's like, "Oh, all right. Did we tell you that we care about the environment?" Yeah, we forgot to mention that. But you didn't say that before, the whole time that I was giving you money. Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Now that you are going to give the money to someone else, I care. When you're giving me the money, I didn't care.
I can look the other way.
Yeah, I can look the other way.
Yeah.
So human beings are something else. Now.
The motivations are great.
Yeah. Now on the uranium mining, a few things were pointed out here. On uranium mining, Headspring Investment is currently exploring in situ mining methods. And we know that the aquifer is sensitive. That's the governor, not me. We know that the aquifer is sensitive. And then he pointed out something that actually got me salivate even more. That the Namibian government, the Namibian government requested an independent technical consultation from the IAEA.
Mm.
Yeah. And he went on to to point out that the IAEA visited the site in February of this year, and they went to the site for a fact-finding mission, and then they just did their thing, and but they're yet to produce a report. Now that report is the one that the Namibian government will base their what's the word that was used here? The state will base its final environmental clearance decision strictly on those findings. And when is it coming?
Amut, I've asked twice. The answer was pretty clear from the Environmental Commissioner, Mr. Mufeti, and from the Ministry of Environment. That report lies with Cabinet, to the Cabinet level. So it's between the President and the Minister.
So they'll have to go through it before...
No, they've already got it.
Then...
They... What I don't know is primarily to... Well, I can't speculate further past that point, but with the Headsprings media engagement back in June, I asked the question about that report, and the Headsprings people also just said, we can't divulge into that report.
So it has become another South Africa Namibia Orange River.
It is a South Africa Namibia Orange River, all protocol reserved, not even the all protocol observed it's part, which was at least entertaining. But it's more like we have to wait for that part. So, and what's her name? Our colleague, Francina did bump into the same team of people last week at the Mining Expo, regarding, the potential for Namibia to actually achieve actual benefit from uranium mining.
Yeah.
Because that project seems to be the only one in comparison to the uranium mining projects at the coast, that tries to do something else, that tries to potentially gradually move Namibia to a uranium consumption country.
Yeah.
Not just extract it,
take it to the ship
and ship it out. Because strictly right now, guys, for those of you who don't know, the Russians don't want our uranium. I'll be honest with you. They've stockpiled their own uranium for 50 years.
That's like saying Elon Musk wants my salary. What for?
No. Or Elon Musk wants your computer. No.
Really?
Elon Musk builds his own computers. So that's not the aim. The aim, what they've now realized since the 2022 Russia-Ukraine conflict, is that Russia realized it has to now increase its international relations with other developing nations.
So, development partnership.
Yeah, they are now trying to literally do specifically what China has been doing for the better part of the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Engage greatly with Africa. That's why you see a greater Chinese footprint in terms of across Africa.
Yeah.
And now the Russian footprint is trying to... But the Russian footprint has come in on... On some scenarios, it's not the best. For example, West Africa in the Sahel on... Yeah. Counterterrorism, it's not the best, but I mean they were one of the willing other partners besides France and the US to step in into counterterrorism, and here in Southern Africa you now see the Russians play a different kind of a international relations strategy. Now they would definitely like to have enhanced relations. Now Namibia is already at an advanced level of that enhanced relations. You can fly directly to Russia. I'm not promoting, guys. I'm telling you facts. You can fly directly now to Russia. You just get your ticket. You don't need a visa. I think you do need a visa. No, you don't need a visa. You get your visa on arrival in Moscow. You can fly directly and vice versa for Russians visiting Namibia. They can just fly directly to Namibia. So the opportunity is there. That's where Namibia is at. And obviously, no.
So basically, China laid the foundation that both the Russians and the Americans are playing catch up with. Well, see, in relations to establishing, trade and diplomatic relations with Africa that goes beyond, I'll just take your stuff and
Cooper. Well, here's the thing. The funny thing about American relations with Africa, Helmut, if you now look at it in hindsight, in comparison to who was here before the Americans, the French and the British, it seems like America is playing a connect me to the African countries dimension with the French and the British.
Which
means that the French and the British are still holding on to the former glory in terms of African or developing countries versus the former name of the UK, Great Britain, the colonial name they used back then, in that kind of a relationship dynamic, which is a very warped dynamic. Because also earlier today, the one professor now stated there at that event earlier today, where at UNAM, that he explained, he's a professor himself. He said the German development strategy builds the infrastructure. They don't give the equipment that needs to go into the infrastructure. So they'll build you the classroom, but you need to buy the tables and the chairs and the stuff. Which was a funny, you know, I could understand his particular sort of like explanation, which was very tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But if you also look at this enhancement of soft skills and soft power on the African continent, you start seeing it becoming ever more and more obvious. And in that scenario, I think because the Americans were just contained on HIV prevention and HIV, you know, financing and funding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then Elon Musk went in there because Elon Musk knows what, God knows what on of development. And yeah, I know that there are people who hate billionaires, who hate rich people in this world. And they will also come up with smear campaigns. For example, that Antifa itself is a real sort of like social terror element. If you look at it from your understanding of what a terror group is, Antifa fits the bill. But the Americans deny us that they don't have localized terror, you know, terror breeding grounds.
They call them all kinds of names, but okay, now let's just take the literal word of the literal meaning of the word terror.
Yeah,
and you find out that you can come up with any technical language you wanna cook up. The bottom line is you are
creating terror.
Exactly.
Yeah.
3 minutes to the hour of six. But before we continue, let's take a live read. Vilvicha University 2027 applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences Program Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife / Accoucheur Level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honors, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Sciences, Science Honors, a Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, Master of Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
You want to say, Helmut?
A couple of seconds will be my speech when I'm governor.
Kavango East. Governor where?
Kavango East.
Okay.
State of the region address. You have 2 hours of just radio silence. So, governor, why do you have 2 hours of radio silence, state of the region address?
Why are you watching the screen? Why are you staring at the screen blankly for 2 hours?
That's how much development we have accomplished.
And drinking water. For that 2 hours, Helmut, do you want to be known as the first governor to be fired? To be fired after
on spot
a silent address, to be fired by WhatsApp,
silent state of the nation address. So you'll have the first, state of the region, state of the region address with a double S, silent state of the region address. Then you get a call from the president. I appointed you, but Honorable Governor, please put me on speaker. And you're in a hall full of people. Honorable Governor, it was nice working with you.
Yeah.
And look, that's brutal. Yeah. So, now, the whole, going back to Omaheke, especially in relations to the in-situ mining, and the report that I was really, really, really waiting for, looking forward to, at least the day that's coming out. And now that you are just pointing out that the report may have arrived like 100 years ago, but, you know, it's, economically, politically, I don't know, financially sensitive, whatever it is. But one thing to point out is that both the Vitfle copper reference and the Leonardsville uranium reference brought up the discussion. Ministry of Environment and Mines collabo? The one where they were talking about, you know, they were basically looking at what takes primary in terms of development going forward as a country. If we find, now we have a lot of places that have, unique plant and animal species, but then what do we do now when we find out that, or if we find out that under the grounds where that houses all these unique protected plants and species, there's a lot of natural resources under. What do we do with this environment? And I mean, they didn't say directly, but we both know what direction that report was pointing in. They're basically going, well, what did Trump say again? Drill, baby, drill.
Okay, the IAEA, Hamut, we have to identify, is not as... They are political. Let me identify.
Oh, very.
Very political. Even though I also pointed out specifically that they are the reason as to why the bombing began last year and started this year. But they do have humanitarian parts, which... I am impressed that they actually could convince, for example, the UN of uraniums or nuclear energies or just nuclear sciences particular.
The use of nuclear for energy purposes.
Not just energy, but yeah, overall to improve other parts, you know, like killing pests on your produce.
Yeah.
The nuclear for what do they call it? A nuclear something for good. It was a specific program like that.
Yeah, but
Namibia was one of those testing grounds.
Isn't that one of those activities that is going to take place at the end of this year?
No,
that's a whole different thing.
This took place 2 years back, 2024.
Yeah.
The FAO was the implementing partner here in Namibia,
yeah,
and then they would go and use the Food and Agriculture Organization would go and use.
Mm-hmm.
It's a specific radiation method to radiate, vegetables, fresh produce from any illnesses, blemishes, or, you know, parasites.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can have...
It's more of a preservation method or disinfectant.
It's more like a disinfectant, yeah, though. So that you can basically ensure that you've got enhanced harvesting potential.
Mm-hmm.
So that you don't lose part of your harvest every year because of some sort of a illness, some sort of a parasite, some sort of a this and that.
Yeah.
And it helps specifically that your food can technically be, you know, you capture maximum harvest from what you planted or what seeds you placed on in the ground. Now, Namibia was one of those particular platforms or experimentary grounds. So there is opportunity for that. The second scenario that also then plays out from this address, this Omaheke address, is that the governor was trying to promote a image of how everyone's well-being is tied to an activity and that the activity negates the negative burdens that people are suffering from in the region.
Mm.
If I had the ability to give the governor a score out of 10, his presentation skills were 10 out of 10.
Mm.
10 out of 10. But reality is a different judge or different witness or different testimony than you giving me a lovely PowerPoint presentation that sounds lovely in the heavens, like, you know, to reference the governor's own reference of the heavens. Because if Nivewoop is the resettlement farm that I suspect was the farm that was given to one of the Sun communities living in the region,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know that technically the government is trying to change a cultural dimension of one of Namibia's sort of like protected international community, protected communities locally in terms of international protection elements, because the Sun and their language and their culture is one of those endangered cultures around the world, which means they are protected to an extent, which is the marginalized dimension that Helmut and I dissected in previous sessions of the Home Run. Then it technically means the government is trying to change the way of life of these particular communities. Now, we see the altruistic outcome. We see the good. Every Namibian sees the good. Because I didn't care about Nivewoop, but then Nivewoop just kept ringing, and then you went and then started with Nivewoop in today's show, Helmut, and I was like,
why does that sound familiar?
Why doesn't Nivewoop sound familiar? And if my suspicion is right, it is the resettlement farm given to one of the Sun communities. Now, here is where things get interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to convert ancient civilizations into agrarian lifestyles, prove to them that they've got to stay fixed to one piece of land, which is also against their culture and their way of life. And since Namibia prides itself on culture and cultural identity across the country, this could potentially be one of the more severe things to have to deal with, even though you can see the good that comes out of it. Even though what I'm basically doing is hypothesizing, guys. So I'm speculating a scenario. If this farm, Nivewoop, is the resettlement farm for one of the Sun communities, we potentially are facing a human rights issue once again. Because this is altering the way of life of people who technically have said many times before at many international platforms whose lifestyles should not be amended. These are people that want to walk across the Botswana-Namibia border,
mm-hmm.
walk across your farm during the night. You would not even know that they were there, but you would know, or you would hear about it. And this is some of the particular scenarios that I'm suspecting probably might play out. Another dimension, Helmut, about what the governor tried to prove, which was technically him trying to, you know, show his, in terms of gamer, video game player lingo, he's trying to show his best score or his highest score, was potentially how agriculture across the region would stand a chance to play a more enhanced role besides the peanut butter factory question mark situation.
We're still waiting for that, the same way that at least I personally still waiting for watermelon juice factory.
I don't know if we have to go back to that region this year. I did list a bunch of regions there for us to dissect and to go through, but I just don't know. She might have changed her song between now and last year's last address, but we could see whether or not watermelon juice has materialized or something. But let's, for example, say the true benefits of agriculture is gonna come to fruition one way or another. The governor explained at great length how the smaller communities came together, positioned community garden projects as their means to for self-sustainability, to achieve food security, and to ensure that they reach their particular you know, in terms of like nutritional targets in those smaller villages, like the one that you mentioned, that one with the complicated name that I am not going to attempt. Oshimbunde is the other one. Then there's Farm Niverwoop, because it technically falls into the same category, rural community agricultural products or projects. Then there was another one. Vitflay, I know, was not on the list for those particular community garden
setups. I know it wasn't.
Vitflay was not there. So what we see from this is the governor realized, I mean, the various times that I've interviewed him since 2023 heading this way, is that they realized there was a big problem specifically with nutrition in the region, specifically in the rural areas. Secondly, access on a regular basis to this nutrition.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, ensuring that let's try and remove some of the burdens. For example, how do you empower the people to technically feed themselves? Good, that I also give a good thumbs up to, because that was actually good reporting that I cited there. Mm. It seems like he is already stuck in his resource curse from the start. And why I'm going to say that is he, in the previous scenarios that we've looked at Omaheke, he's gone from the potential and the negative challenges to now stating, okay, what we have there is what people will only work with. Now, you can technically see that Omaheke is technically like at the back end of potential, like in the entire region reaching some sort of a prosperity or achieving developmental goals.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing was first feed people. That seems to be good. Second thing is now try to get infrastructure and services out to people. It seems that will be the next phase that he's also citing. But the governor's sentences were also sentences, you know, that he would show a goal achieved, and then it goes into a aspiration to see that goal enhanced to something else. So you don't know if you're sitting with a report at the start of a sentence and whether you're sitting with an ambition at the end of a sentence, because you see both being combined in the same sentence. So for what we now know is, one good report, which is a good thumbs up that he gave, was self-sustainability was now becoming the theme in the region. Good stuff. I don't want to also hear about malnutrition and hungry and children dying from starvation, stuff like that, because they can't access food. Next thing was, okay, consolidation of all these projects. Remember at the start of his address, he cited that not all ministries wanted to participate in giving or relinquishing information and data to his office, which makes things problematic. Because why would a situation like this exist? I thought that these extension offices formed part of his regional authority.
There's one bleak part about the whole agricultural progress.
Yeah.
Now, I like the fact that they are now running one of the biggest, a crop farming, a crop farming project, which is irrigated, which is a good thing. Now, and I'm emphasizing the irrigated one. And he also pointed out that the backyard gardens, are watered in one of two ways. It's either now they have they are running on both irrigation and rain fed, which I think pointing those two out gave me a satisfaction of okay, because if we only depend on rain, like the African Development Bank experts just pointed out a few weeks ago, that we could be facing one heck of an El Nino come, this is a rainy season. Basically, from October, November, basically going straight into next year. So if we are not, if a super El Nino hits, chances are very high we're going to receive limited to zero rainfall some parts of the country. That means, we could be facing we could be finding ourselves in a scenario that we found ourselves a couple of years ago, especially back in 2024, when the exact same thing happened, when we had to follow suit shortly after Zambia declared that particular season a state of emergency. Yeah. I mean, this was just it was a devastating, you know, drought. So the question now that comes up is, okay, agriculture-wise, crop production-wise, you're doing very great as a, you know, very great as a region. But in the event of a 2023-2024 El Nino, what is the backup plan? Yeah, what is the backup plan? Now, which to some degree, you know, I had that question when he started to, you know, emphasizing the crop production initiatives that are running in the region. The question I kept asking myself, so, okay, because I kept going back to the African Development Bank specialist El Nino World Forecast. And then he kept referencing that, okay, you know what, irrigation, rain fed. I'm like, okay, we have all the irrigation systems more like, you know, infrastructure, you know, increasing in terms of its irrigation ability.
Yeah.
Because in the event of an El Nino, like as it was projected by African Development Bank, you know, specialist, that would then not impact, or more like knock the region back to square one, where we are having discussions of malnutrition and food insecurity. And this is not just for Maheke region, because the, you know, El Nino is not just coming for, you know, if it comes, it's not just coming for Maheke region.
Or
it's
just coming for Namibia.
Yeah, or just for the Namibia. It's coming for the entire southern region.
Which is actually weird, Helmut, because remember back, not last year, 2024, Zambia had declared the state of emergency based on that
drought.
Their drought, technically their diminished rain season.
Yeah.
Zimbabwe had to do the same. What was funny was that we still enjoyed an average rainy season in 2024. We still enjoyed an average rainy season in 2025 last year.
Yeah.
Because the state of emergency in Zambia did not cascade into 2025. They could lift it because they saw once again return, you know, rainfall returns happen, which is weird because this sounds very similar to 2024, this 2026, you know, this outlook heading into the rest of this year. Now, it also makes things tricky in terms of how then do we look at things? Because yes, obviously, the Office of the Prime Minister, they will have their disaster risk management protocols in order.
Yeah.
But it's a discussion of, do we first see the rainfall? Do we know when the rainfall comes specifically? Because he cited, that's not the governor, cited that last year they enjoyed lovely rainfalls. You know, certain parts had above average, certain parts had some decent rainfalls. Because I heard one part had 500 mil of rainfall and received 500 mils worth of rainfall. Yeah. 500 mil is 50 centimeters, if you don't know. This is 50 centimeters. For our viewers, this is about 50 centimeters of rainfall. I'm not talking about water, flood waters, how much, it's just, it accumulates to 50 centimeters.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you know a rain gauge, guys, if you remember from geography on high school, and others were 30 centimeters worth, a ruler's length.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like things were good. Things looked good. The funny thing is, we're already seeing it happen in Europe, that El Nino, which is surprising. Because Europe, if you know Europe gets its rain during its summer month, you know they will be set. Then you now have to start crossing your fingers for Namibia. Are we going to see healthy rainfall in the southern hemisphere?
Yeah.
The northern hemisphere means absolutely nothing for us. How far south we are from the equator means nothing for us. However, we have to now understand whether or not the El Nino will strike in Asia or in South America, or will it strike here in
Southern Africa?
Southern Africa. That's how we have to assess an El Nino, La Nina system. And if an El Nino strikes somewhere else, another part in the world will have a La Nina. Because they happen at the same time, which means, like Helmut described the other time, little boy, little girl.
Mm-hmm.
we have to know where the little boy happens to understand where the little girl will come about. Now, usually, your bet is going to be Southern Africa for the little boy.
Which means...
More than often, it is Southern Africa who's going to experience the little boy.
Yeah.
Now, that's just one of the details.
I found it fascinating because, you know, I had a lot of questions which were partly, you know, which were partly answered. I'm like, okay, you know what, if they have a lot of, if they have a lot of agriculture initiative going on, and which is good in terms of addressing food insecurity and malnutrition. So it's we are headed in the right direction in terms of the food, food security discussion, not just on a regional level, but you can basically stretch that on a national level. But one thing to basically put in mind is that we are a semi-arid country. That means we don't have the amount of rainfall that is common to countries like Zambia and Tanzania, for example. But the thing is, when you're talking about El Nino now, El Nino is basically a difference between two extremes. When the rain falls, it falls heavily that, you see a lot of floods. Potential floods. And we saw this again in 2022, 2023. While Zambia and a bunch of, Southern African countries were declaring state of emergency, in terms of drought, most parts of Eastern Africa, you think your Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, that region, they were flooding. So it's, none of which is good for agricultural production. Not flood, not drought. So now, when the governor, kept talking about either, a large-scale commercial level type of crop production and the backyard gardening, he kept referencing irrigation, which made me basically conclude that, okay, that's a good thing, because if you're talking about irrigation, that means you are ready for if the rain doesn't show up. That now brings up a whole different discussion in terms of what is your source of water? Where are you getting it from? Is it impacted by the drought? And what that brings us back to is that water is most likely going to come from underground. And then we are back to mining. And now I understand one thing. I totally understand from the governor is the also heavy emphasis on the extractive industry. I want to blame the guy, but then I would have to blame the entire Namibia and the entire African country. We are very pro extractive industry in terms of our foresight and in terms of solving all our economic all our economic problems.
Should come from this.
Yeah, should
this
just
foundational
come from
activity.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same with agriculture as well. Everything must come from agriculture.
Yeah. So when you talk about, I can't criticize him for heavily emphasizing the extractive industry because the African continent is heavily, our economy on the continent is heavily reliant on the extractive industry. And the only terrible thing is, which again is not such a bad thing, but now we're talking about value addition and processing everything at home and all that, which also points just into the direction of how much we are holding on to the extractive industry. It's a very lucrative one, the extractive industry. The return on investment is, it's a very good one. Actually, it can basically be looked at as a double-edged sword, because the return on investment in relation to the extractive industry is a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It will give you a high return on investment, so high that you will stop investing in other sectors to the point where that when that resources runs out, you realize that, well, you actually needed agriculture for you to eat. You can't eat those rocks.
Yep.
AKA the Dutch case.
Yeah, that's why I said we are technically already there, as Namibia.
The entire African continent is there.
Yeah.
And Namibia and Botswana are biting their nails right now because of just one resource. That's a diamond. Just one. Not many. One.
And I still don't know if we recognize this fact, but I see this fact this fact being that we are too obvious in saying, no, mining will carry Namibia. And now, last week, the president went and cited that mining has to employ 10,000 more people. I wonder. 10,000 more Namibians. Huh? Yeah.
You know, look, when I referenced that increase in literacy rate later, later on, the point I was making is a lot of us now, when we, when the president or any public figure brings up figures like that, out just out of curiosity, I genuinely would like to know. Like, I would like to know more. Okay, the mining industry must employ this number of people. Are we basing this on the number of homework or report or analysis that we have done, or we're just saying we will employ? Because I would be interested if the, if a report was just a well-analyzed report was brought up that, you know what, this and this and this type of resources that are being mined in this country, and this and this and this is, there are the available opportunities, and based on this, these are the available employment, the creation abilities that this industry is capable of.
Mm.
But just throwing that out there just leaves me with more questions than answer.
Mm. Because we have to ask the question of, okay, so if you want mining to employ 10,000 more people, potentially, okay, how many people are currently employed in the mining sector, let's say, for a welder? How many welders does the mining sector need? Or if it's a bricklayer, how many bricklayers do they need? And are they able to even accommodate, for example, the unemployed bricklayers in places like Windhoek, where, let's say, you know, work is job, is project to project based?
Yeah.
Dimensions like these start becoming more apparent because we need the data and the statistics that need to be produced to understand, okay, what decisions potentially can come from here.
Yeah.
But there's nothing I can do if the governor just cites agriculture, 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 backyard garden, backyard garden, backyard garden. And you're like, okay, but how do you modernize now the rest? Now, after the backyard gardens, how do you now modernize those communities?
I think I can answer that on behalf of the governor.
Okay.
And when you reach at the level of Windhoek, where you replace a backyard garden with a home shop, or backyard flats, then you know that you have made it in life.
Home flats, yes, because everybody needs, because housing will be needed also in the future.
Backyard flats. Look, I know that, in Windhoek we like to also, point that idea out in terms of, let's have backyard gardens. And every time someone brings up that idea, especially in reference to Windhoek, all I do is look at them and start laughing. First of all, housing is more on demand than backyard gardens. So people will reasonably put backyard flats behind, wherever they have space, than backyard gardens.
Mm.
That's very understandable.
You are right.
It's tough.
Good enough.
Yeah. Tough.
Yeah, now this is, David joining us, but let's take a short break now. Indeed. And then when we'll come back on the other side, David will continue where he stopped after he cleared his throat.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa bora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. Welcome back. So we continue where we left off, and today's discussion here on Home Run, we have the recently shared or publicized state of the region address coming out of the Omaheke region, where a lot of things in terms of development and challenges are basically pointed out, especially in reference to the development in terms of progress that had been made in agriculture and the extractive industry.
Mm.
It must be rough being a governor.
You know, looking at what Mr. Ganate has said,
yeah.
To me, I think he's moving to a right direction.
Yeah.
Especially when you speak about food security, you speak about increment in terms of agricultural production.
Yeah.
But the question is that how many people are going to benefit from those projects?
Yeah.
And is the reporting in line with the number of people within the Omaheke? But one may also be able to look at it from this way, looking at the region itself, just by looking at its name, it's defined, you to say it's a dry land, and agriculture play a major role in that aspect. That's why you hear a lot of irrigation.
Yeah.
And also the aspect of it's quite a region that one side is Namibia, but they also share borders with other regions in Botswana.
Yeah.
That's why when it comes to the major part of that regional production, I think it's agriculture. But the question is not how many crops we have produced. It's not about how many bags of maize you have produced, for example, or how many cattle have you raised. Look at the numbers of people. Is inequality also extended to Omaheke? If a certain numbers of bags of rice, for example, were produced, or if numbers of goats, as it has been stated, were given to farmers, how many more they need that? Because I don't only look at the state of regional address where somebody is compelled to give reports, to give statistics, to give what they have done.
Yeah.
But you also need to contextualize it to say, when you are talking about this number, how are you addressing the issue of inequality within your region? Because, Helmut, where we are now in Namibia, even if you are at a place where people are performing very well, you must always look at an ordinary, average person to say, is this person surviving within that aspect?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you have a replication of what is happening at the national level. There is no difference. You may do very well. And I was listening to what he spoke about his statistics. And I think the president was also strategic to keep him there because he's a political survivor. you look at the new administration, all the governors
yeah.
I don't want to say they were told to go home, but thank you. New faces were brought. But he was the only man standing. I think it's also a region that you don't disrupt. You need somebody to maintain that pace.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, food security has been at the center, but let's speak about the commercialization. If we can commercialize what we present, if we can commercialize what we present at SORA, then it could be good. And I also want to extend to say, apart from now, what has been produced, what about what the nation want to get into, agro-processing?
Yeah.
Because most of the youth that you see, Youth are the most vulnerable people, most affected people in Namibia. All the regions, when you look at them, I know he spoke about the aspect of young people being at or volunteering or assisting with a project of you know, extending the fence at the borders.
Yeah.
But the question is, how many of them, their lives were improved? If we just really need to go to the reality, because numbers, we can throw numbers and statistics, which is good. we can talk about hectares of land that they were worked on by tractors.
Yeah.
But did it change the people on the ground? Are the people that are in that region, are their lives improved? Because a project success must not be measured on numbers. It must be measured on impact. How many people took out of poverty? How many businesses were created? How many of them are sustained? And also how many of people are inspired within that that region? Because even nowadays, inspiration on its own, or giving a person not necessarily faith,
yeah,
but giving a person a reason to continue engaging in those productions, I think is necessary. Because what I'm always looking at when I look at this presentation is the aspect of human upliftment. You can build a lot of beautiful roads or hospitals which are connected to human upliftment, but how many people were uplifted from that aspect? It's the same thing that, just to give an example, you build a hospital in an area where a lot of people are in very poor situations, and you have statistics of how many people have utilized, for example, that clinic or that hospital. But you'll be shocked how many of them were complaining about malnutrition. The services are given, but are they connected? just to look at that aspect. But I think overall, when I look at it, I think you're standing on the right direction. The only thing that which I want to see is a pace. Because my concern is only a pace. You can do beautiful things, but are you coping? Are you catching up with the number of people that are in that region? That is what I can say about the Sora for Mike.
This is one of those things that, you know, that will always make me, you know, look at public offices a very challenging thing. I don't know how, you know, it's more often looked at as, I'm never going to look at a public office as just a you know, a job opportunity. Mm. Because if you look at what you are required to do, it's, you know, it's, it becomes very overwhelming. And especially if you compare what you are expected to do, mm-hmm. you know, what you are required to do,
yeah.
and the expectations coming from not just your supervisors,
yeah.
or you know your ministers and the president,
mm-hmm.
but overall the Namibian general public.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your own people in yeah. your constituencies or your region
yeah.
that are listening every time that you give you give update with regards to what's going on in your country.
Yeah.
So you have to meet their expectations, and some of them can be outright ridiculous, but you have to just understand it from a rational standpoint, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what I find fascinating is this. It points to it really requires not just public officials but also ordinary citizens to understand development-wise what's going on in their respective regions. Because, David, if you are a public representative, say a governor or constituency councillor,
yeah.
That may even be representing, your region at a national council level.
Yeah.
Every time, when you go to your, when you go back to your region, when you meet the people on the ground that yeah. would want to engage with you,
yeah.
you want them to engage with you on a discussion that transcends your political affiliation. Yeah, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people that have this, the mentality of, I'm not interested in politics. I'm yeah. not into politics.
Yeah.
Now you have public representatives
yeah.
that are supposed to be answerable to those people.
Yeah.
So that, I can only imagine how confusing the discussion becomes, because if I'm from your region and yeah. you are a member of parliament, now, if I don't know what projects are going on in my region, development-wise, what discussion am I going to have with you? I believe this is why you now start seeing people going, like, every time that you run into a public official, your first go-to discussion is, well, I just don't like you because you're from that political party. Now, the question you should be asking is not which political party they belong to.
Yeah.
No. There are this and this issues that we see in this community.
I think you mentioned a very important point, especially to look at, it's more than a position. And also, there is always a saying to say everything starts and ends with leadership. Yeah. To say you are actually facilitating, you are the head of that region politically. Yeah. And your job is to provide leadership. And you cannot provide leadership by dividing people. And you cannot provide leadership at the regional level. The same leadership you provide at the party level. That should be also understood, especially to people who are sent to politics through appointment.
Yeah.
You realize that when you are at that office, you are expected to make sure that everybody is under you. Whether I do not care which political party you are coming from, if you are a governor, you are my governor.
Mm-hmm.
When we are fighting at the constituency level, you won or you lost. If you won, you are the constituency councillor. You are my councillor. And people don't differentiate this.
You know
what's happening in Namibia? Yeah. People are contesting for a constituency. Somebody is defeated. Then realizing that now that guy has a public office. It's beyond now because the political party is a ticket to get to the public office. And this guy realizes no.
So it's basically a job interview.
Yeah. Some they realize to say no. I think I'm not even going to ask for service that. Even somebody who you were contesting with, when you become a constituency councillor, can come to your office and demand service. And you cannot say no because you are from this political
party. You're just saying this because
you become a leader. I think that should be differentiated also.
Yeah.
Especially where do you draw the line between party politics and national responsibility?
Yeah.
Especially to look at the functionality of the region. A region is very diverse and you can't do it alone.
Yeah.
Other people think you cannot really say a governor failed because a governor is not doing everything alone. A governor just needs a leadership that is inspiring people to come together. Then those people, they can come and report to you.
Yeah.
You are the, somebody put it very well, you are the eyes and the ear of the head of state within that region.
Mm-hmm.
And every high-level official coming to that region has to go through your office.
Yeah.
But you also need to make sure that people under you, they have, number one, access to information, and they must know where the region is going. And they must also know their responsibility, because if you are a governor and you are only there politically, you are there for event and you are not inspiring and motivating people, then it becomes problematic. If people are not disciplined within your region, it's your responsibility to inspire them. I was impressed by, who is the governor of Angwena, Meme Kadiva. There was a point she was giving a presentation, then she said, look, even parents, you must make sure that you don't just go to coca shops. She went to that aspect of social responsibilities too. To say, children, you must also do this. You can't just wake up every day and you are at coca shops and you are not going to school. That is also telling you to say, apart from projects, you need to make sure that those are your people. But to me, I think Ganate is a good guy. And he has a huge responsibility. And that region, I think, is at the center of climate impact, especially when it comes to Namibia. Because even if you look at the name itself of Maheke, Sandveld, it's indicating to you that it's a dry land. That's why there is always an aspect of irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to his Sora, at the beginning of the communique that he gave to the people is that Omaheke is the biggest agricultural region under irrigation. That is what he stated, which is quite very important, not about rainwater, but under irrigation in Namibia. It says a lot about the land. It says a lot about climate strategies that you need to put there, because is undeniable. And it's also a vulnerable region to animal diseases because you are at the border. And if you look at the records, it's a cattle land at some point. You look at the records also to say if you are not protecting Omaheke, you're also not protecting Namibian, you know, farming. Yeah.
Commercial break.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only 25 Namibian dollars. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just 18.99 Namibian dollars. Get 2 kg of Surf hand washing powder for just 49.99 Namibian dollars. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for 28.99 Namibian dollars. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only 12.99 Namibian dollars. You Save. Where else?
As I was saying,
as I indicated earlier on, parallel to that,
I mean, who taught Africans English? Because who taught Africans English?
No,
as well?
Africans are the best English speaker. If you look at the current ways we are speaking,
I remember when I was in primary school, I believe, there's a word that was just in every teacher's mouth, and that word was a saw. They were just shoving that word in parts of a sentence. It didn't, like, so everything has saw. Saw.
Just put it, put S.
Yeah, one is
at the end of everything.
Yeah, S-O.
So
so one teacher ended up with that as a nickname. Yeah, because you know it was just so.
It's Project School, ne?
Yeah.
I'm just joking. And then
David said that, guys, not us. David said that.
Yeah, but
Omaheke
is a very interesting region, especially when I indicated to say if you don't protect Omaheke, you have a lot of holes within your system. But if Omaheke is successful, and I think the president was very strategic to make sure that through her reshuffle, you put somebody who has been from that region, somebody who built the foundation, maybe to say he must have done something compared to all other governors that... some were promoted, some were put on hold for now due to the new things which are coming in. But it says a lot about the character of an individual too. To say you don't only need a tough guy, you need somebody who knows the environment.
Yeah.
But you can also see that even the Ministry of Agriculture, it has a lot of direct focus on Omaheke, looking at the various projects. You look at the aspect of even resettlement, farming resettlement, you realize to say Omaheke has always been around that aspect, because if you handle that properly in terms of agriculture and food production, I think it's a good point of departure, especially if you want to deal with food security. But if you also did not handle Omaheke very well, you have a lot to suffer from, because number one, you are at the border. Number two, you don't have enough rainfall. Number three, if your fence is not well, protected, everything can come to you. That's why I think it's strategic in terms of where we want to get into. But things I do not hear is agro-processing. Things I'm not hearing very well is value addition. Apart from all this big land that we put on, apart from all these hectares that we talk about, what value are we adding to those things?
It's
the same thing with the extraction. Are we continue to do the same thing that we've been doing?
Which is why I keep emphasizing on the general public. We must really take interest in what's going on in our regions in terms of development, everything development related initiative. You have to know about it, because that's the only way you can have a meaningful conversation with your public officials. Otherwise you'll just be, either worshipping them, which I'm not saying don't disrespect them. I'm just saying, don't say holy holy at thou and thy and thy name every time they show up. They're just one. First of all, as an African, before I look at someone's position, One thing I was, one thing we are basically trained from childhood as Africans is that you have got to respect your elders. Irrespective of their, of their position. So, when you meet, take for example, when you meet a councillor, a constituency councillor, member of parliament in their, 50s, 70s and 80s. The first thing you are looking at is, this is an elder. Yeah. Before you get to the, before you get to their position.
Before you get to the content.
Yeah. Now, because if we understand what's going on in our regions on on a project level, we are not going to be like those public officials, capital projects. What project? Because
those were not public. Those were councillors, Helmut.
Well, they are public. They are not private councillors.
You are doing very well.
The councillor that is a politician there is only a temporary employee. Remember Governor Ipinge's identification last week of the permanent and the temporary jobs that were created in Shana?
Yeah.
A councillor.
It's also part of temporary jobs.
They are temporary employment.
In that very temporary time, they are representing who? And me.
Us. Yeah. That's why you can't call them an official. The officials are the ones that 8 to 5.
So they're not official?
They're technically.
You're making
not.
Sound. No, you're making them sound like contraband. Look,
I technically am making them sound like contraband. Hence the reason why I kept emphasizing they don't pay taxes on the earnings. The officials that work for the local
because it's an instant party job. Look, the point you're missing here is.
But in terms of speaking, they are public officials.
The point here is we have got to meet each other halfway. Because you have the public officials that have to basically fight their own inner demons. And by what I mean by that is not get out the holy water type of demons. The conflict, obviously. Look, I always put myself in a shoe of, take, for example, a governor or anyone who is basically, especially the political appointees. I'm in a certain position. I know that the vehicle that got me here is a political party.
Yeah.
So now I have to pay a reverence to that political party. And on one side, you have the public that your office requires you to serve. And from time to time, those interests collide.
Yeah.
And from time to time, you are going to run into other officials who will disagree with you, not because the ideas that you are that you are putting forth doesn't make sense. They do make sense. Mm. They are just disagreeing with you because you are from different political parties. Yeah. These are realities. How do you navigate those as a public official, for example? What's that agro-processing? Mr. Nganadu pointed that out. Peanut butter.
Yeah.
But that plan of peanut butter processing peanuts into peanut butter is still underway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still on. It's still in spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now. Hey.
I can.
But you mentioned a very important aspect, especially playing a very difficult ball, especially between politics and what the public expect from you. And I think a lot of people do not graduate from that aspect. they don't graduate because
they still study.
Yeah, because yes, you are on a party ticket, but when you are there, you have your own strategy to say if your party wants you to do certain things, yes, you are going to do them.
Yeah.
But how you are going to do it is you who have that strategy. Yeah. Because that's why you find out that some of the governors, compare the previous governors, I'm not going to mention their names. You really had very brilliant guys, but they were not able to do it because they were failing to jump between from politics to become a public servant. They were not getting that right because you have to make sure that they are doing very well at the political level because people are even scared of going back to the party and disagree with each other to say, no, you are here sitting me giving instruction. Yes, it's good, but this is how I'm going to do it. I'm not out of the plan. I just have a new strategy. This is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And for me to do it, I need to work with these guys. But if you want to tell me that, you know, one thing that I believe it with all my heart, especially the destruction of institutions. Mm-hmm. It's when you fail to draw the line between CADA deployment kind of leadership and also somebody who is able to do the job. A politician must understand to say, at the party level, this is what I'm saying. When you go to parliament, this is what you are saying, without diverting, because you also have a caucus. But when you are looking at the public, you are one. I'm very impressed by the public parliamentary committee on public account, the one which went to Rundu town today when they were asking.
Oh, Anacleta is enjoying
us. Asking about financial statement. You know what that is telling you to say, these guys, when they went there, yeah, they are well prepared.
Yeah.
They have a team, they have their chairperson,
yeah,
and they have a caucus, and they have their documents in order. That is what exactly we want, beyond the politics. Mm-hmm. That's why when they were asking those questions, there were a few answers coming from the other side to say, where the 27 million expenditure not recorded, where the receipt and all these things. That is exactly what I wanted to say, a governor must be able to transcend from being a politician to become a public servant, mm-hmm, and also to work with people. Because if you do not know people that are within that region, they are not going to sabotage you. You are going to be doomed to fail, because mm-hmm, they are the ones who are going to do the job. If you don't know the business people, if you don't know the church leaders,
yeah,
if you do not know Dwight, who have influence within his region,
yeah,
some people just need you to talk to them, to come to them. And there is this thing now, I don't want to enter into generational conflict. I've seen it already coming out. But if you are, let me say, you are just a young guy who was brought up, you need to humble yourself and go to the elders too. Yeah, because there is also what is called African tradition.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go there and sit with them to say, no, uncle, I'm here. This is what is going on here. But if you come there and you are just speaking your Queen's English,
you start pulling out spreadsheets and speak about it.
It will not work.
Yeah.
It will not work.
Using language, we must reach targets, yeah, and goals, and people, yeah, are like, "What's a good thing?"
No, those are the things. You can't go to my village and speak a corporate language. Who will understand you?
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe you're talking to teachers. You know that people, they come to public meeting, they want food. And people don't know this thing. They just look at the, are they going to be food?
Okay. Now,
what's the incentive?
Look, it's a good thing you brought that up. Because, in my denomination, the church I go to, it doesn't matter where I go and attend this church. I've never attended the church in Zambezi, but I've attended it in Tsumkwe, Grootfontein, at the coast and here. More often you will have a translator.
Mm.
Now, because if you are going to, if you have a town hall or consultation at the village, and you're speaking corporate English without a translator, that is, you are missing the whole point of consultations, because for one, you are just assuming everyone is going to understand.
But here's the thing, just before we end, you just mentioned a very good point. We need to bring in a culture of town hall engagements. Every town, every city,
yeah,
whether it's a school hall, use the town hall, talk about issues and communities.
Yeah.
Because that's only how, not just us, the media will know about issues.
Mm-hmm. But the issue of language matters.
Yeah, yeah.
No, the issue of language really matters.
It'll be settled there, because then you know how the protocol will then be.
Yeah. Even translation, even mixing.
Even sign language interpreters.
And the issue of language, it matters really. Official, it's good to have an official communication.
It's good to have an official
but
language.
Ask, I mean, and you just open my mind to say, let's give an example, especially at Oshana, when people are listening to the presentation.
Yeah.
How many of, at what level the whole content was translated?
For everybody.
Yes, exactly. Radio can go there and summarize. We don't say everything.
Yeah.
But how many people have heard what happened?
Yeah. From the governor himself.
From the governor himself. Yeah. And how many also understand the projects? Because if you are there, even the farmers, the farm workers must listen to you.
This now you're assuming the farmer speaks British English.
Now you are coming. You're
assuming that the farmer translated for the farm worker.
So if he's already struggling to understand himself,
Do you know what some people do? If they don't understand English.
This corporate
English. Switch off the thing.
Exactly.
No, but you are right to say, if okay, let me say the farmer understand at his level. What yeah. about the farm worker?
I will tell them the governor said I shouldn't pay you for the next 4 months.
You are at the Keto region. You are at the Keto region and you are not translating to people that are holding the economy. You are talking about farming. But I think in terms of future communication, I think it's necessary.
Yeah.
To me, I'm good.
Yeah. Let's see each other again, same time, same place, guys.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.